Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Tim. No, I was just joking with it's Fortescue, right? I got it right.
Yes, you got it.
That somebody forgot to ask him how to pronounce it. Said Tim for here. So I was just giving him some jazz on that. So and he loves music, so he relate to that. Tim is an executive coach and communication expert. That's why he's on this show. And founder of 40 Watt Coaching. If we have time, I want to ask you about that name, but not right now. He is teaching individuals how to enhance the communication to create connections that have a meaning and a purpose. I just love that stuff. I absolutely love it. And I want to thank you for being on the show, Mr.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here as well.
Thank you very much. Serendipity, accident, coincidence. What was that thing in your life, that Ajinoy moment? What was that thing that you kept doing that like, I better go down this? No. And it kept pushing you. And the next thing you know, you're at where you're at because you just didn't wake up and do this. What was that thing that enlightened you? There's probably many things, but really, what really connects with you?
There were a few. And as I look back on the adult part of my life, I think about life presents you with a series of doorways. And it's our choice whether or not to enter them. And it's not always, it's okay if you don't always enter them, but when I saw the doorway, I tended to enter it. And to answer your question, I think the first serendipity was when I graduated college, I got a quote unquote, a good job. I got hired by Eli Lilly in Indianapolis I was a sales rep. Wow. And really happy, really proud of myself to get that job. But there was something, maybe Ajinoy, there was something, I didn't know that term at the time, but there was something speaking to me that there's more. There's actually something more I want to do. And I was pretty clear on it. I just didn't know how to get there. And that thing was coaching. I wanted to be a coach. And the thing I knew at the time, because I had been a basketball player through school, was basketball. So I thought, how can I keep this good job I just got that my parents are proud of? Keep forgetting. But how can I also scratch this itch of, I want to become a coach. Maybe I want to become a coach for a living. And how would that even work? So I walked across the street from the apartment I lived in, and there was a high school. This is back when you could actually walk in a school and didn't have to go through a security protocol. I walked into the front office and I said, can I speak with the basketball coach during the school day? And they said, yeah, he happens to be a teacher here and he's on his prep hour. He's off. And so somebody walked me right to his classroom and he had no idea who I was, but I walked in. I had a resume printed with like nothing on it, but I had a resume printed, which basically said, I will help you for free. I will do this for free. Can I help? Can I help you coach? And being a coach myself for many years, a basketball coach later on, I was like, wow, you don't get that offer very often. Somebody who's passionate about it, who is willing to come do it for free and just loves it. And so he said yes, thankfully. And that's what started my coaching career. And flash forward 20 years later, I started my own company, which is 40 Watt Coaching. And it was really chasing that same itch, chasing that same feeling of, I love this. This is fueling me. I want to do it more. And can I make a living doing it?
Right. That's a key. I love that story. I mean, universal mind, spirits, and angels, serendipities, accidents, coincidences. You know, just to speak to the audience for a minute, did you listen to what he said? And you can call it your gut, you can call it whatever you want. You don't have to call it Ajinoy, I call it a cup of coffee. But he followed it. He just like, something's getting me in there. And it's like, I will do it. You know, there's something I read, Tim, a long time ago that said, I'm paraphrasing this badly, that you would love it so much that you would do it for free, but people will want to pay you for you to do it. That type of thing. I'm sure you've heard of that. And that's exactly what you were doing. And it didn't, and again to the audience, remember, this didn't happen overnight. This happens over a period of time, because I was mentioned to a friend one time. I said, why couldn't I come up with the musical and blah, blah, and all this other stuff when I was 25? It goes, well, let me ask you, did you have any life experience that you could even come up with this stuff? Like, no, answer's done. You're now get on with your life. I'm talking to you later. because you needed that life. You needed to go through. Tell me a little bit more about the coaching part, you know, the basketball coaching. How did that help you guide you to your point that you are?
I could see pretty quickly when once I was able to start volunteering and helping at that high school in Saginaw, Michigan, is where I lived at the time. I was working a full day, and then I would go do this at night. Sometimes till, if there was a game, it would be until 9:30 at night. So these were really long days, but I would leave the game or whenever I left practice at night feeling more energy. And I've read about other people saying that that's an indicator that you know something is really calling you or something, but follow it. And so I just was like, I don't know where the energy is coming from. I should be exhausted. I'm not. And I stuck with it. And so over the next few years, I progressed myself from volunteer assistant coach to then someone gave me a job as a freshman coach. You know, and they let me, freshman basketball coach, where they let me tailor my practice schedule to after work hours because I wasn't a teacher. And then from there, I think I became a junior varsity coach and eventually a varsity coach. This was all while I was a medical sales rep. I was a pharmaceutical or medical sales rep for about 10 years. And that was like my day job. I took it really seriously. I wanted to do a good job at it, and I did. But there was this other passion. It was me thinking through, how can I love this thing. It's fueling me. It's consuming a lot of me too, but how can I do more of this? And I just continued down that path for a decade.
Yeah. And you're a magnetic field, and it's like, it is hard to explain. And it doesn't matter whether you could be a salesman dentist. It doesn't matter what the field is. You don't have to be. I believe everybody's creative because everybody has an imagination. Because when I teach my seminars and stuff, if you don't think you have an imagination, just think about this. What's the inside of your car look like? What does your kitchen look like? What does your bathroom look like? And you have images popping up. It's like, that's it. You have a creative imagination. You've been given to this gift. This has been given. Don't deny it, because you used to have it when you were little and you just stopped using it. But I love how you were like, that energy, it's undescribable. It's not caffeine. It's not a high. It's just an unexplained physical and mental feeling that you know what I'm saying? How can you classify that feeling?
I don't have a word for it either. I was listening to you going, yeah, I don't know. I don't know which word it is. But to me, the word that came to mind is happiness.
Oh.
And it was happiness from, and I haven't really described for the audience, like what actually was the happy feeling. To me, it was connection. I was making connection with my players, with human beings. At the time, they just happened to be student athletes, and which I am still really passionate about connecting with, but don't have as much time now with the work I do. But it wasn't really about the sport. It wasn't that I was passing down this knowledge. It was that I could help someone feel more confident or see themselves in a different way. And it didn't happen every day, but if it happened a little bit, that was that feeling that fueled me.
The connection, it's knowing that. And it's interesting you said that. It's like it had nothing. It's like you were not like some basketball guru. You knew how to do the function, but that wasn't what you were doing. You were empowering others, which empowers ourselves. You were doing something that, you know, you were making them aware of their capabilities. You know, the best thing you could do for anybody in your life, family, friends, business, show something to them that they don't see in themselves. Bring it out in them. And we all do it in unique ways. And we don't listen to those little taps on the shoulders. You listen to the stuff that the serendipities, accidents, those angels and spirits are always going around us. You know that, boy, what a coincidence. Why am I talking to Tim? And that's one of the things I love about this show, is because I'm meeting people. I'm listening to people. And you are helping me more than you can ever imagine. Because I'm like, oh, I didn't think of it that way. Oh, I think I better mark that down. We are magnetic fields, absolutely magnetic fields. So I want to ask you, the power of being yourself and not what people think you are, should be, or what you are. How do you tap into the power of being yourself? The thing that you found, how do you tell the people listening how to do that if they're in a bad job, bad relationship, right? That's the biggest thing that most people can relate to. How can you kind of guide them, or what experience happened to you that they can go, oh, I kind of like that?
It's been a lifelong journey for me too. So I can tap into my own experience. I can think about the main use case for the clients I work with now. I work with companies. And so usually when I'm thinking about how can I help someone be more themselves, more authentic, more effective, really, it's in the use case of how can I help people deliver a message or share an idea, get people on board with what they're trying to do at work. And so one of the ways we think about it is I try to help people get into a state where they are thinking comfortably, like they're talking to somebody that they know, like talking to a friend at work or talking to a family member. There's a tone and a body language and a dynamic that emerges within us when we're comfortable. And when we're speaking at work and not comfortable, it could be like we're really not comfortable, like nervous or tense or something like that, or just the default where we're in a serious voice. We're trying to get these details out and we tend to be serious. We don't sound that way. We don't sound the same way as when we're just talking to a friend. So it's, okay, first, can we identify how do we sound when we're just telling a story to a friend, somebody we know, and can we take some of that and bring it into our other communication?
Interesting, because that's very well said. Because when I was in the corporate world, which is most of my life, you know, you're sitting in a room and people are afraid to open up. What if the next person has the new cell phone or whatever that product is in your industry? But you as the leader or the manager, or the supervisor, are letting your ego get in the way and your body language get in the way and the way you're talking to people. It is so important to realize how you're communicating more than it is what you're communicating. Because if you're communicating something that means something to you, but it means nothing to anybody else, you're going to lose that. You know, so how do you kind of focus that in when you see somebody, you're working with a client and it's like, you see it right in front of you. You mark your notes down while you're listening to this. That's what I do when we do the interviews, right? I mark down things and don't interrupt you because you want, because you'll forget it in an instant. But how, when you're looking at somebody, do things just pop into your mind very quickly? Body stance, eye movement, the way you're lilting your voice, you know, that type of stuff. Is that what they kind of see to get a good message of where they're coming from?
Yeah, I've been doing this now for about a decade, communication coaching and executive coaching as well. And I think over the years, I've had enough repetitions to see quickly and make a read on what people do well and where they could improve, where the gaps are. And what I'm looking for when I start to work with an individual or with a team, and I'm coaching several people at the same time, I'm looking for, can I find something that is a quick win that will show them that, yep, I can do this. I can do this quickly and I can do this better. If I find something where it's like, well, that's going to take a while to address that particular communication gap, I'm probably going to leave that one alone first. And instead, I'm looking for something to get a quick win and so that we can start to build some momentum together.
That makes total sense. Baby steps. You know,
yeah.
People always think, and I know you know this, is like, you know, oh, I went and got my MBA as an adult when I worked in the corporate world because nobody took advantage of tuition reimbursement. Like, you're paying for how much? But I knew at that point in my life, like, getting that piece of paper didn't mean as much as the life traveled along that way and what I was learning and the knowledge I had as an adult that I could have done when I was younger and also bring to it and then bring to my job. I mean, I was a technical support engineer, but I was also the representative of the company. And I work with all sorts of in the factory and in building the x-ray tube, going to the hospitals, all these different things that entered. And it's, and I learned so much from going in, not like I knew everything, because those who claim to be the wise men are sure the fool. I don't know everything. And I go, hey, Tim's been yelled at for 3 days by the radiologist, the manager, his boss, the CEO screaming, the CT scanner's down, the x-ray equipment, they're losing tons of money, patients got to go somewhere else. So I go, Tim, let's go for a cup of coffee. You mean in the cafeteria? No. Let's go down to Panera or something. And he looked at me like, what are you talking about? Or we just take a walk outside if it's nice wherever I'm going. It's like, how you doing? You know, I'm not there to fix anything. I'm there to make sure that you understand you already know the fix. You just got caught in the dog chasing the tail because you're just like, there's worry and fear coming on this end. this equipment's not working on this end. You're stuck in the middle. You're being yelled at by people and the equipment. You're like, oh my God. And then, because I learned very quickly as a support person, I'm not doing anything. What was the name of that? I think the movie called Hitch. Have you ever seen the movie Hitch? It's like a hand. He goes, so I really didn't do anything. No. And that's, you're bringing out things in people that they need to see in the cell. Like we talked, I think, off mic about that, you know, or maybe we did it when the mic was on. How do you, so you do that, but you do it in baby steps and then worry about the big stuff later. When you're working with people, do you get it pretty good? Well, it's hard to know. On average, how long does it sometimes take? Or is it just more in an individual basis for people to get it? Because they have a lot of emotions attached to it and limitations attached to it going, oh, no, Tim, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't do that.
Yeah, that's where it gets, it's a case by case. And those self-limiting beliefs are the variable that can take longer or shorter. If somebody's got some real walls built up, but I can't do this, then it's actually not their communication that we're working on. It's their mindset. It's their emotional, the way they're viewing themselves right now. And so that can sometimes take a while. And to put a number on it, I'd say, you know, my quicker engagements with clients, I can do something in like a span of three different sessions or four different sessions, an hour each, and make some pretty significant progress on their communication. If we're going to go deeper into mindset or changing the way somebody views themselves, maybe that takes 6 months or even beyond. And I have clients that we work on an ongoing basis where we've worked together for over a year, and it shifts and morphs just based on what they're coming with. You said something that I love, and I've heard you say this on other episodes too, and that is, people have it in them. I'm bringing it out. It's not like I've got to create something brand new. Like as a basketball coach, I had to teach a player a skill. They didn't have that. Like, that's not something we're inherently born with, how to shoot a basketball properly.
Good point. Right.
You know, so if they didn't have that by the time they got onto my team, we were going to work on that skill. Maybe I was bringing out the confidence that was already in them. Now, what I'm doing in communication coaching, I'm working with people who are successful. I'm working with people who have accomplished quite a bit of thing, a lot of good stuff usually, and it is there. It's just a matter of me catching it, reinforcing the good that they don't realize. And not surprisingly, some of the most successful people I've worked with are the harshest on themselves.
Mm.
That's helped them be successful, I think, in ways that's been their recipe or their operating system. As I sometimes call it, has been
well phrased.
Critical of myself, and this is how I achieve. I continue to achieve in the way I have. Well, sometimes that just meets its. It just hits its ceiling,
right?
And you can't scale anymore. You can't get better doing it that way anymore. At a certain point,
right?
And it's time to flip it and start to look at, okay, here's what I do well, or I want to catch something good in myself. And so, a lot of what I'm doing through a communication coaching lens is that. And sometimes it maybe has nothing to do with communication. It's just really about finding what they do well and helping them re-examine how they view themselves.
Yes. And something I want to ask you, has anybody come back to you? They might not have, but has anybody ever come back and go, you know what? This has really transformed my life. It's really helped me communicating with my kid.
I do get those messages sometimes, and those mean everything to me. That it stops me in the middle of my day and I think, how is this even possible that I am so lucky that I got a chance to ride next to this person for however long we worked together? And it wasn't me, you know, it was you. It was you, the person. You did the work. You know, I just asked some questions and like told you what I saw. But I'm so lucky that I get a chance to see that transformation when it does happen.
I love that connection because I think business to personal and personal to business, if your life's a mess, your business is a mess and vice versa. And everything is alternating current, you know, in life, better, worse, little better. So this, I understand, but you don't have to be stuck in that arc all the time. And when you can kind of pull back, you know, I teach people a process of procedure, you teach people a process of procedure, whatever works best, there's no right or wrong. And you can call it anything you want. You call it Ajinoy, you can call it a cup of coffee or a donut. It doesn't matter, whatever works best. But when you do something, like a quick example, I've told many people, is like, we bought a new microwave. And stupid Phil put a hard-boiled egg and it blew it up. Why did I want to cook a hard-boiled lid without being covered and it blew up? So I opened the thing, I heard a boom. I go to the microwave and every expletive coming out, thank God there was nobody in the house except for my wife. And she's just sitting there at the kitchen table. She goes, "You done yet?" I go, "You know, you did everything you said that people shouldn't be doing. You were getting mad at an inanimate object. It's like a hammer falling on you and you throw it in the wall. You just caused another problem. And you are talking to something that has no personality or no consciousness." So I looked at her. I said, "You know what? I didn't like that version of me." She goes, "What?" I said, "I didn't like that version of me." It's like, "What does that mean?" I said, "Because I went back into my conscious mind, pulled out a folder, said, then this bad thing happens. This is how I react. I go through that whole process, dog chase the tail, comes through my mind, goes to my physical being, and I'm like, the bad stuff that goes to the toxins that goes to your physical body, you know, for me, I burp or I'll cough or everybody's got some kind of stupid symptom. And if you do that consistently, you get all sorts of problems. And I just didn't like it. I didn't, because your central nervous system doesn't know that if you want to experience the worst thing in life, don't do it. That happened 10 years ago. Your central nervous system in your mind wouldn't know it happened 10 years ago. So you just, those things flip on so fast, you don't even know they're going on until somebody says, "You know, you've been doing that a lot. She noticed something recently." An engineer in the medical field worrying about high-level medical equipment. She goes, "You know, you're complaining about technology all the time." I go, "I am." I look at the phone. I go, "This is not fast enough." She goes, "Really?" And it's like, so I was aware of this. Just happened a few days ago. And I'm like, I really do. But it's hard to admit, I don't know if you want to call it a fault, whatever word you want to put on that. And when you see somebody and the light comes on, what do you see in their being? What do you see in their physical, you know, what do you notice? What I mean, because you know, you're like seeing somebody, sort of like the whole body, we're like, what do you see? And like, ooh, I got through.
Like maybe like Ajahnoy, the concept, it's hard to put a word on it.
This is true.
It's such a profound, happy feeling to see that light bulb go on. It comes, it's usually like a sense you get. It's like, maybe it's the smile. But it's definitely a feeling that's coming across where it's like, okay, something we just covered unlocked something within this person. And it's interesting to me how it could be something that is really small, but that really small thing just a switch flipped. And now the person sees this bigger thing. I know I'm speaking in abstract. Let me give an example. I remember years ago when I was newer, maybe in the middle of my 10 years of being a communication coach, I was working with a senior executive at a tech company in San Francisco. We were getting her ready to go on stage and do some major talks, you know, at big conferences in front of lots of people. And she was clearly a good communicator already. So my job was, okay, well, how do I help her unlock more? How do I help her feel more confident? And I asked about her specific goals. And I found that if I could help her find a way to start with more confidence, instead of starting off a little shaky inside and then getting more confident as she went, that might be the big unlock. That might be the first win. So we went through a series of different techniques that she could use at the very beginning when she started her talks. And all of a sudden, I saw that thing you and I are talking about, where it was like, oh, I had never thought about it this way. And it was like this whole new thing opened up in her mind about, I'm not even really sure, but I saw that feeling. And she was able to then go and open up with confidence and have a ton of fun with what she was doing. And yeah, that's one of those stories I love.
I think that's being authentic, for lack of a better description, being yourself, whatever that passion is. I was playing music when I was young. I had no idea. I went through different stages in my life. I had no idea. You know, when it came to suddenly changing and going to my own business and my kids are all grown up and all this different, everybody's in different stages in life. I was like, do it now. Really? Do it now. I mean, I did some engineering work. We had a plan. I did, you know, contract work, build up some income to buy stuff and move forward. And I'm still using it several years later. But the whole idea is you have to have a plan. Nobody's, someone says, well, I took 3 loans on my house. I mortgaged my family. I sold everything. No. Listen to what Tim was saying earlier in the conversation. He was working a lot of hours, but I don't know if it's funny, but the ironic part of it, maybe that's the right word, is you were so energized. No caffeine, no nothing. And you went to bed, you're like, for me, when I come home after I do my talks or teachings with students or whatever, I come back, I am so energized, I can't eat. I've got to calm myself down. My swallow mechanism is failing. Like, I've learned, like, just relax, take a breather, sit down, no pacing, because I'm on a high, because you're doing something that you love. And, you know, in the scheme of life, we don't live very long. My wife is an actuary, and she always tells me different numbers, and she's been doing it a long time. The average age for men are like 82, 83, 85, 86 for women. And even if you live to 100, it ain't that long. And to be in a place of automatic, I mean, we're already on automatic, right? We brush our teeth, we get a, you know, whether you're with somebody or married, a partner, it doesn't matter. They could tell you exactly how you do everything every morning, which is fine. It keeps us safe. But the automatic part, when you go do something 8 hours or 10 hours a day or whatever it is, if you're an automatic, but you're like, I just don't feel it no more, look into it. Pray, meditate, talk to somebody, follow somebody, listen to somebody, talk to Tim. Talk to people and see what they can do to help you bring out what you're passionate about. So what strategies do you have to starting these pursuits? Great, great serendipity going into this question. What are the strategies you have that you could tell people to go into these different processes? They're in a place they don't want to be, but they need a little nudge. What would that nudge be that you could communicate?
Are we talking in terms of people are feeling like they're on autopilot and
yep.
need a nudge to get into something else in
their
life?
Their passion, right, just like you did.
Yeah, their passion. What I used to try to do when I felt stuck in the 20 years before I started my own business, I would tell myself, let me do a little bit more of the thing that I love. Let me find a way to get a little bit more of it, whether that's volunteering a little bit more, or my thing was coaching. So it was like, maybe I could go take a coaching certification program, and which I have, you know, become an executive coach. It was like, what can I do to bring a little more of this into my life? And then what I found is that, not surprisingly, when you go to a coaching certification program, or you're going in an environment where other people are excited about the same things, you get energized, and the snowball effect starts. You start getting more momentum. You're around people who are feeling the same things you're feeling in other ways. And I've found that does a lot of good. Instead of being around people who don't maybe understand your dream, or, you know, which I've had too. Like, how do you want to do that? Like,
right.
How are you ever going to make a living doing that? You know, if you're
right.
around people who maybe love you, but they just don't understand, and they're giving you a negative reinforcing message without even realizing it, like, that's not helping me. I'm going to places even a little bit more often where I'm around people who get it and love this thing too, then I'm getting energized.
When I was starting this, because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where I was going to go. The music first, I didn't have this philosophy. I didn't have a podcast. I didn't have anything. And I'd come upstairs after I left my job, because I knew the company was going to go out of business. So that's why I left. And because I thought I'd retire there. But fine, it was meant to be that way. And I'd get some calls. I started doing my contract work. Then I started getting calls from other people that left and going, Phil, we want you to come over here, da-da-da-da-da. And I'd run upstairs. We've been working from our home for many years now. And I tell my wife, she'd look at me and go back downstairs and shut up. It's like, we talked about this. I'm like, but it's so easy to go back into automatic. And it's so easy to going, oh, look at that. I could, you know, make a living right now. And I could be, you know, and have all the different things that I was comfortable with. But it was gone. It ran out. But your mind is going, well, this is the most logical way to go. And just taking your time, you know, one of the comments you just made, something I read a while ago, that if somebody came up to you and said, Tim, you can't do it, you're going to fail, I don't know what you're doing, you're out of your mind, you don't have any experience in this, you don't know what you're talking about. And then you let that bother, it takes you like, it was like some kind of scientific study they did. It takes like 20 or 30 people to come back and say, yes, you can, yes, you can, yes, you can, yes, you can, to get that one negative thing. And I always say, I'd rather have one positive person in my life than 100 people bringing me down. You know, and people might mean well. I mean, family members, they love you, or friends, they might totally mean well because they don't want you to be starving to death. But it's like, well, thank you for sharing, but I'm going to make this work. Well, how are you going to do that? I don't actually know right now, but I'm, And your great advice, a little bit at a time. Don't quit your job, just like you did. Find that group. Get a mind mentoring group. Follow somebody, shadow somebody, read a book, get a coaching certificate. What if you want to be a chef, go to it's College of DuPage out here in Illinois, you know, the 2-year college. Go to a night class. You want to be a therapist. There's so many different things. You could do it online. There's so many different things that you can do now that you couldn't do 20 years ago because of the internet. There are some good things like this, but going to school, following, shadowing, reading, doing some research, put all the old saying, put your ducks in a row. Make sure that you know what you're doing. Just don't go jump out on a limb and assume you know. What strategies we talked about? My bad. Reading my own notes and I screwed it up. I love being human.
They'll fix that one in post.
Actually, I always tell I told the production team that keep the flubs. I don't know. You remember a gentleman named Johnny Carson?
Yeah.
Okay. So Johnny Carson, those who are younger might not know who he is, look him up. He was on, I think, for like, 30, 40 years. One of the things that made him unique and funny was they recorded it. It wasn't live, but they never edited anything. And all the mistakes, all the flubs, all the stuff that went wrong was the funniest part of it. So I always tell him, keep the stuff in. I love being human. Tell me about 40-watt coaching. I love this. I think about the 40-watt bulb. But tell me about the name. Tell me about where it came from and what I just like the name.
Thank you. It was a bit of a journey into me asking, am I ready to be my authentic self? Should I name my company something that everyone understands, or should I do something that's really specific to me with meaning and a story behind it? And I went for that.
Yeah.
The short version is my last name is Fortescue. My nickname has been 40. Like you take off the skew at the end and Ford. So people have called me 40 for years and years. And same thing with my family members. You know, my brother is Matt. Yeah, so he's M40. I'm Tim T40. And my daughter Zoe or Sierra, there's Z40, S40. Anyway, that's our nickname. And so when I started thinking about doing this, I was like, you know, I want to do something with the number 40 in it. What could it be? And if anybody's able to see the visual, I have concert posters behind me. So like live
concert posters,
huge
yes.
Part of my life.
Yep.
And there's a music venue, which I have never been to, but I have heard plenty of live recordings at, called the 40 Watt. It's in Athens, Georgia. And
oh, cool.
REM played there from Athens. And one of my favorite bands, The Wigs, is an indie rock band.
Ooh, The Wigs. Yeah.
Yeah. So I knew about this venue. I'd never been there, but I was like, wait a minute, 40 Watt. 40 watt, like a light bulb going off. Wait a minute, I'm coaching people. This works. And so I had this idea, but a journey. I dipped my foot in. I actually wrote it down and said, okay, no, there's no way I can do that, right? And I didn't have a business yet, but I had an idea for a business. And I contacted a good friend of mine who is a graphic designer in Michigan, where I'm from. And I said, I have this idea. You know, I love live music. Do you think we could incorporate this into a logo? And she was like, I totally see what you mean. Let me put some ideas together and send it to you. And so to your point, it was like, find that one positive person who can say yes to you or say, yeah, I see it. Let me help you. She played that role. She was like, yeah, I totally see it. And then she sent me these logo ideas back. And I was like, wow, I can see it. I can actually, this is real. I can do this.
Yeah.
I was at least one of those big steps. For like, yeah, I'm going to do this.
I love it. I love it. I love the stories, I think, because people are so when I sometimes I'll have new people coming to the seminars at the health club. And I look and I go, I know you. You're probably wondering, what the heck is that AJANOI? She goes, well, what is that? And I do different every month. I do something different from the philosophy. I just don't talk about the philosophy. I do different parts. So I do a quick review of what it means and what the AJANOI and all that stuff. But I say it's a made-up word, but it came from the universe of mind, spirits, and angels. And by the way, it's a registered trademark, so you can't steal it. And everybody, of course, laughs. But it's something that I'm working with somebody who used to be a molecular biologist. And I'm like, dude, you got to use that. You know, he's doing what he's doing. And I'm like, you got to use it for all it's worth. Because I didn't know what the heck that even meant. Because, you know, we have life experiences and different things that we've done. I was an engineer traveling the world with X-ray tube and stuff. I've learned so much from other people my world was a learning ground. It was just teaching me. It was a paid teaching. Everything was just, I couldn't do what I'm doing now without it, and realizing we're all the same. Everybody just wants to be, leave me alone. I want a family. Give me a job, nice, some water and some food, and I think I'm going to be happy. And then we all have same stuff, different stories, but it's basically the same stuff. Feel a little better, feel a little worse. And I learned so much that, you know, we're not different. Really, we're not. I mean, on the outside, yeah, the physical being, yeah. I'm talking about the mental energy, the soul, the spirit. We're all looking for that little part, that thing that can make us happy, the thing that can make us at peace, that thing that can make that joining with the universe. It sounds very esoteric, but the last thing we go to, what Tim's doing, he's going into the mind. He calls himself a coach, but he's going into the mind and he's pulling out what you have in yourself. What he's seeing something in you that you don't see. And that's, I think, so important to hear in this conversation. Be with people that are positive for you, that see the future for you, that will, like my wife going, shut up and go downstairs. You want people to do that, because otherwise you're just going to be on, you know, like I say, automatic. And I'd rather be doing my passion and something I love, and the money will follow. In my experience, anything I've ever done in my life, you know, whatever that is, everybody's got different numbers, but the money always followed. And because once you're, if you're going in it for the money, it's okay. But for me, it's empty, but it just always follows along. Tim, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. I'm doing really well. Don't take this out. I love being a human. Well, thank you for being on the show, Mr. 40. But I also want to leave with a positive aphorism, which you've done a bunch of. What's something you can leave, a little tidbit with the audience? Just like, ooh, I like.
There was a piece I wish I would have told earlier in a segment, so I'm going to come back to that. A question you asked me earlier, and it's not all positive, but I think the bigger picture is positive. And that is, before I came up with that name, 40 Watt Coaching, and the logo, and had the courage to try this on my own, which was about 3 years ago, 2020. The thing that happened before that is I unexpectedly lost my job.
Oh, wow.
And so as I think that, and I mean unexpectedly, like just out of the blue one day, your team is being largely eliminated and yourself included, and your last day is 2 days from now.
Whoa.
And it, which was a tremendous blow, you know, to my confidence, and self-doubt crept in, and how did this happen to me? What's wrong with me? Those kind of things. I know a lot of people go through this in their own ways, and are quiet about it as well. For me, it was coming back from that emotional experience and thinking, what do I really want now? What do I really want to do? I don't think if that didn't happen, I don't think I would have had as much conviction to start my own thing. So it was actually the pain, you know, the pain of the failure or whatever, you know, right. I don't know if it's proper to call that a failure. It just happened, but it was the pain and picking myself up, which gave me the resolve to have the clarity to be like, you know what? I am clear on what I want to do. I've gone on long enough. It's time now. I'm going to do this. So I hope that helps. It wasn't the most positive story, but it ended up in a really positive way. It's that as I look back at these series of doors that open through Ajahnoy or whatever forces in the universe were presenting opportunities for me and for all of us, it's not a linear path of just good to good to good to good. It's like, you know, unexpected thing happens, you know, drops your spirits down badly. Like, oh, build yourself back up. Maybe a new door opens up later on. And so that's kind of, it's just kind of zigs and zags as it goes. But sometimes it's those failure moments that create the best opportunity for what's next.
I don't think your story was negative at all. I think it's a life story. And I think those are God winks, I call them, and little nudges going, you know what? Boom. But you don't look at it that way because you go into the fear mode. You go into the protective automatic mode. Oh my God, I got to do this. I got to get another job. I got a family support. I got to pay the, you know, and it's totally fine. But if you go back into it, because I kind of could have easily, I left voluntarily and I've been laid off. Everybody's been laid off or something happened in their life before. But here I'm like, this ain't going my way. And it was frightening. And my wife said, okay, it's time to do this. I'm like, really? you know, I've been talking about this for years. But it is scary. But it was also a catalyst, and because I loved my job. I loved it. I did it for over 25 years. I loved it. Every day I got up with joy and gratitude. I'm like, where am I going? One of my bosses, I had a few of them, they were like, they'd go, Boogaloo. You know, they'd call me Boogaloo. They go, Boogaloo, what are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be at a customer site? Because they said, fill in a box. He goes with the extra tube. I loved it. I loved the traveling. I loved the thing, but it started losing its luster. I don't remember how many months before things started changing at the company. And then the changing started. And then you look back at it and going, now I understand. I mean, when you're in the thick of it, you don't think that way. But if you reframe it, and it's hard to do this, if you reframe it and going, I got laid off, you walk in and go like, hey, how's everybody doing? Everybody's being laid off. And by the way, that's including you. Your last day's in 2 days. See you later. Have a good day. Like, you're like, you can't control that. But I think those are little nudges because you would never probably, most likely you wouldn't be here right now talking to me.
Correct. And it's just, you know, as a matter of fact, that is a fact. I would not be here right now. And that's a really well, thank you for saying that. Am I appreciative of this moment?
Yeah. Well, because you don't realize the different things when you start looking back at stuff. Your spouse, your wife, whatever, who you were married, you know, those little nudges, how you met them. And so, you know, we could both go down different, the whole thing with relationships, and finding your way, because the most time that have ever occurred in my life that something really great happened, I wasn't looking for it. I just, like the musical, just recently something really big happened. And I'm like, oh. And then one person showed up, then another person showed up, and suddenly things have completely changed. Now, it's still in the early stages, but I'm like, oh, but I wasn't looking for this. And I was like, wait a minute, when you're not looking and you're like, you know what? When you try to force things, it doesn't work. And that's what I was doing with the musical. It's like, I just let it put on the back burner last year. Like, it is what it is. If God has it in store for me sometime, then I'll just, it's great. People go, oh, it's great, but I don't know anybody. And then suddenly something happened. I'm like, and it happened like this, boom, in 2 weeks. I'm like, and I'm like, but it kind of bowls you over. And anybody that thinks, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, you can't do this stuff on your own. You need people in your lives that are supporting. And that's what you do and what your job is.
It is. And it's an honor to be able to play that role in people's lives. You've mentioned this a couple times too, and we haven't named it, but I think the people we keep closest to us play such a big role. I think it was Jim Rohn that said that we are the something like the average of the five people that we spend the most time with.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that line. And as I've grown and gotten more wise, I guess I feel like I consciously really think about that. Who are the people that I spend the most time with, and do that? What kind of energy do they give me, and do I give them? And I think that we might share this in common because you've mentioned your wife and playing a positive role in your life and believing in you. But I think I married one of the people that is the most critical in a good way to like believing in me and helping me believe, you know, in what I'm doing. And for the listeners who it's like marriage is not your thing, that's totally fine. But it's like, who are the people that you're spending the most time with? You know, and that's such a big factor.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Jim Rohn either. He said something like, if you're the smartest person in the room, you need to have the smartest person in your group. You need to find a new group. I don't know if it was Les Brown or one of those guys or Bob Proctor. But yeah, the people that we're mentioning, go look them up. They have great lessons to be learned, and they're all over the internet. Jim Rohn is not around anymore, but he's got some great lessons. Surround yourself with those people because that is the most important thing. And I said it was the last thoughts, but we went a little bit more expanded on that. Because I was calling it a showy. anyway, thank you again very much, Tim, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Absolutely. And remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.